In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Joining me this go-round is English singer-songwriter Courtney Hadwin. She's just 19, but she's a veteran of many song shows in both the UK and the USA. Here, in fact, she was on America's Got Talent. This year, she's been working with American producer Kevin Bowe, and her latest single, Monsters, is a recent coolest song in the world. We'll hear a tad of Adele, and then I'll be back on the line with Courtney for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I'm a little bit lonely, but I'm never alone. Surrounded by myself and there's nobody home. The night's so long, last all day, and I can't keep keeping all the monsters away. I need a flashlight to chase them away.
It's Coolest Conversations time here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and with me today is dynamic singer-songwriter Courtney Hadwin. She came to prominence in this country with her appearance on America's Got Talent, and her most recent single is Monsters. It's this week's coolest song in the world. How are you, Courtney?
I'm good. How's you?
I'm doing pretty good. Very happy to be chatting with you. I was reading a thing that said you are from or live in, help me out here, is it Helliston, England, Northern England?
I live in North England, but I no longer live in Hesledon. I'm now a Yorkshire girl.
Oh, okay. So is that familiar with, Newcastle upon Tyne? Is it in that area or where?
It's about 45 minutes. It's near York.
Okay. Oh, right, near York. And so where you grew up, though, was that in Hesledon?
That was Hesledon, yeah.
Hesledon. And so that was... I looked it up on a map, and it seems like the population around there was pretty small, and around maybe 6,000 people or so. What is it, sort of rural or in the middle of nowhere?
It was just like a little village. Like everyone knew everyone. Everyone knew everyone's business, kind of thing.
Makes me think of Mayberry. Yeah, have you ever seen this American TV show, The Andy Griffith Show?
No, I've never heard of it.
Oh, that's okay. But it's set in a little town in North Carolina called Mayberry, and all... It's pretty funny. It's like a 60s thing. So you're in this little bitty small town, right? And or small area. And I've listened to your covers of your thing when you did Otis Redding's Hard to Handle and James Brown's Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, and watch this thing where Howie Mandel's comparing you to Janis Joplin, and then an interviewer asked you a few years ago about your influences, and you said from Little Richard, James Brown, to Janis Joplin,
yeah.
Really a long list. All that is incredible, right? It's stuff really into, but why are you into it? Why are you into that kind of stuff? What was going on that keyed you into that kind of stuff?
I feel like I've been through every type of music, like starting with music, I fell in love with musical theatre, and then kind of as I got older, I started discovering new music, And I remember the first time that I started getting into the kind of rock and roll soul blues, I was on YouTube and I just happened to see a video of James Brown performing I Feel Good. And I literally just sat there studying it and like wanting to be exactly like it. And I must have only been about 11, 12.
Wow. When you said musical theater, how old were you at that time?
About nine.
About nine. Well, what's funny here is, so my daughter, you were about, how are you? You're 19, 19-ish?
19, yeah.
19. So my daughter's 21. And so when she was 14, she made this, or maybe 13, 14, I'm going to say, 13 maybe, somewhere in the 13 to 14, she made this announcement to me that she said, I'm 50s. I said, why are you in your 50s? Because she'd always listen just to whatever the pop music was and the radio. No, I'm 50s. And I said, how are you 50s? What do you mean by 50s? And she said, well, you know, the Everly Brothers, Buddy Holly. And I was like, well, Little Richard. And I was like, oh, well, and I said, well, that's great. Yeah. That's great. And then I said, how do you know about this? And she gave me a, let's say a, out of a 10 scale of 10, eye roll, 10 could be the max eye roll. I got like a 5 eye roll out of that. And she said, YouTube. Right. So that was the key, YouTube, huh? And yeah. I wonder what was the algorithm that was, what was getting you to James Brown? Do you have any idea?
I can't remember. I just remember I was sat there and I was watching some video. And do you know how you get like different videos on the side of what you're watching, like recommended?
Yeah.
So I clicked on that being like, what on earth is this? And I remember just sitting there with my laptop studying it for about 2 hours straight. And it just led to other music like Aretha Franklin and Little Richard. And I was just sat there for months on end looking at all of these new people that I've discovered.
And was it any, to you, they're new as you discover that they're new. Was there anything, or did you show it to any friend whether someone is responding to you like, that is old? Why are you bothered looking at something that's old?
Yeah, my parents, because they didn't have a clue who they were either. So it was like I was discovering people that were beyond their generation. Is that how you explain it?
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let me ask you about your folks. And I know you've got, and you have to excuse me, I don't know exactly what the sibling count is, but you do have some brothers and sisters, right?
Yeah, I have a brother and a sister.
A brother and a sister. And so you have this, you had this interest in beginning with musical theater and singing specifically. Is there any other, do your parents play instruments? Was there a lot of music in the household?
No, I was the only one musically. Yeah, my sister tended to pick up music and we kind of did little things together, but I was the only really musical one in the family.
And is there any relative in the extended family that has a similar fascination or interest in music or performer perhaps?
Fun fact, my dad's mom's auntie of aunties somewhere in the line is actually Cilla Black.
Oh, wow.
So that's somewhere in the line of my dad's half of the family.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So have you listened to a lot of Cilla Black's stuff?
I've heard bits and pieces, but not lots.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I look forward to somewhere down the line, it's a Cilla Black covers album. I think that would be really cool. Down the line. Yeah. You got other things to do, I know now. So you've got this interest in music, and it's got to be sort of as you were trying to pursue this, because here there's like about this time you discover these James Brown, et cetera. It's around 11, you said, right? Around 11?
Yeah, about 11, 12.
Okay, well, you sang this in the competition called Teen Star, and you sang like a Bob Dylan song. Had you sung professionally before that, or was this competition like the first sort of coming out?
It wasn't really like it was a competition. It was kind of like just like people from the area came together, and it wasn't really anything massive. It was just like showcasing the talent, like the area's talent kind of thing. But I made a few friends from it as well that kind of had the same interests, which was cool because not many people from my school kind of were as focused on music as I was. So it was kind of cool to see people saw loving the same kind of stuff.
And you are So you go there and you sing a song. Had you taken vocal lessons, or you just decided, I want to go sing the song? And your parents said, okay, what day is it? Well, let's see if we can get you over there in time. or what happened?
At about 12, I started taking vocal lessons. Just because the way that I sing, I got told that can seriously damage my vocals. So basically, I went to vocal lessons with a lady called Julie Miles, who's absolutely amazing. She just showed me that what to use and how to use it right, but still be able to sing the way I want to sing. So I still got to do everything that I want to do with my vocals, but to make sure that I could do it right, basically.
This Judy Miles, I was wondering, one of these clips I was watching, there was a lady and she's talking to you and she's you're going through some sort of breathing exercise. Is that Judy?
I don't know which clip this is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of, so don't worry about that. So why did you sing that Dylan song? It was Make You Feel My Love. You remember?
It was very, very young at the time. Maybe even before I started kind of seeing these artists, it was probably like at the start of it. But I absolutely loved Adele as well, so it might have came through that.
I was watching one of these, watching these clips on America's Got Talent, and it's like the judges, I can't think of which one it was, but one of the judges said, it's like you're talking just briefly, and you mentioned something, seems like your family's all around you, and you mentioned something about people not getting you. With you pursuing singing, was that like a difficult thing with the other kids?
When I was in secondary school, I got picked on a lot for singing. I don't even think it was just singing. I think it was because it wasn't the regular pop singing. And that's why I got grief from it. I just didn't have a good time at secondary school at all. I actually started getting homeschooled after America's Got Talent. I remember turning around to Simon being like, the first thing I want is to be homeschooled so I can focus everything on music.
Yeah.
I think it was just mainly the fact that people didn't really get the way I sang.
Right. It just seemed like a weird, what is that? That girl is so weird. What is she doing that for?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in those early performances that I saw, and you mentioned studying the James Brown, and even in your current videos, I still see a little tinge of this thing with the foot going like left to right, kind of moving, which is such a cool move. I think of that, like the James Brown on the Tammy Show, he like does that all the way across the stage left and it's all the way back across the stage right. How about the rest of your kind of movement on stage? What influences that outside of that little move?
James Brown, literally. Just people like that. One thing I love about singing is just letting go when I'm on stage or wherever I am and not really giving a shit a bit. Oh, am I allowed to swear? Basically caring what people think when I'm on stage.
Yeah, there's a lot of this idea of, so I just saw Engelbert Humperdinck here in Los Angeles. And you familiar with him at all? He's kind of like a Tom Jones kind of guy.
No.
No, okay. So he's like 87, but the older gentleman, but I mean, he looks great. He could easily, you know, be 20 years younger. You wouldn't know, and he's got this sort of rich baritone and... I'm not at a loss now to think of some Engelbert Humperdinck songs. The ones that come to mind are Tom Jones, but they're very similar in their sort of what they would call romantic singing. And he has this whole thing about, being a very shy person. And then the moment he walks onto the stage, he takes command of the stage. And you would never think that he's as shy in person as he is because he's so dynamic on stage and has such a command of everything. How do you feel? What is your offstage persona versus your onstage persona? Is it similar to that?
I mean, when if I don't know anyone, I will blatantly just like my full body like just shuts down. Like I get like really, really shy. But as I've got older, I've kind of blamed that on maybe it's like a trust thing and needing to trust the person before I kind of open up. But once I fully know someone, my friends and family can say exactly the same. I'm annoying as hell. People can't get rid of me. So yeah, I think it's just one of them things of when I open up, I am more myself.
So I'm going to talk about, let's see, that's the Cover Sessions EP came out like in 2019. Around that same time, there was a single you issued that I believe you wrote, Pretty Little Thing. Is that right?
Yeah, that was on AGT Champions.
All right. So well, which came first, the single or the EP?
It didn't actually become a single. It was just a performance on Champions. Yeah.
Well, so Pretty Little Thing, my understanding is that you wrote the tune. Is that correct?
No, that's not actually true.
Well, who wrote it?
Max Martin.
Mm-hmm. And do you still perform that?
With that song, it's a song where I was actually supposed to release it straight after AGT Champions. And that was one of the things that I said when I went to do AGT Champions. I said I wanted to do an original song because I'd already done covers all the way through the show. Yeah. And that was the agreement we had. And I got told I'd be able to release it after, but then plans fell through. And yeah. But I'm hoping that when I start touring as well next year, I'm going to be able to sing that one on tour as well.
So let me ask you about this stuff here, because there's this Cover Sessions EP comes out in 2019. Been several years since those big television show appearances. Initially, you were, I guess, 11, 12, 13. You're 19 now. It seems like there's kind of been a roller coaster here, right?
Yeah, it's been a journey.
Yeah. So you're 19 now. So old timer, how jaded are you?
What do you mean?
What I mean is sort of the expectations that may come along with, you know, doing these programs and promises that are being made. And then, you know, that's not necessarily what you want to do, or that's not necessarily where you're at. And then, you know, continuing on, how do you still feel excitement for music? You know, is it sort of like, don't want to have to deal with the music industry and do it my own way, or what is your perspective?
One thing I can say is that from my experience, you can't trust anyone in the music industry. And you kind of have to like take it with a pinch of salt. Yeah, it's a very weird and hard place to be in the music industry, but now I've become independent and I'm working with an amazing producer called Kevin Bohr. And I'm finally getting to write music that I actually love and what I want to put out there, instead of it having to be molded into something that I'm not.
Okay, so that brings us to Kevin. And I know that at least the liner notes I was handed list him as being the producer on your single Monsters, our coolest song in the world this week. And we're familiar with Kevin here in the Underground Garage. Around 2018, he and I spoke when he had released this album called Every Part of the Buffalo. How did you meet Kevin?
It was actually in lockdown. I was doing writing sessions, and everything I was kind of writing, I was kind of just going with the flow. I didn't really have much of a voice about me. I was just kind of letting people push me about, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I got introduced to Kevin over a FaceTime call, and it was just like a straightaway click. Like, mm-hmm. If we wrote something stupid, we'd literally just sit there and take the mic out of each other. And I've never had that with any producer or writers before. It's kind of always felt like work. But since meeting Kevin, it's like I'm actually finally writing and doing what I want to do. And it's just really fun to be able to work with Kevin. It doesn't feel like work.
So your first single of the year was Breakable. Was that with Kevin as well?
Yeah, all the singles that I've done has been with Kevin.
And were they recorded all the same time, or have you been in and out of the studio over the course of the year?
No, well, brick, but well, a lot of them were COVID at the time. I ended up having to create like a home studio and buying a load of equipment to get the vocals right. Mm-hmm. With not being able to get over there. So Breakable was recorded in the home studio. And I haven't actually met Kevin yet. We're going to be going over and I'm going to be meeting him, I think, January, February time, and finishing the album, which will be coming out next year. But yeah, it's so weird that we've got so much of a friendship and we haven't actually personally met each other. It's all been over like a Zoom or a FaceTime.
That is weird. But that's like, hey, 21st century, you know?
Yeah.
Weird. So let's talk some about Monsters. So you obviously wrote that with Kevin. Did you have some kind of outline or a sketch or how did that song come together?
It was actually put on the line for about 2 years. I was with a label at the time and we wrote Monsters and it was just a demo. But it kind of got pushed to the side. Me and Kevin absolutely loved the song and thought it was like one of the best things that we'd wrote and it had real good potential. But the label I was with just didn't think it would hit or it wasn't poppy enough for the world that we live in now or whatever. So when I became independent, we went back to the song and we started adding instruments and changing melodies. And yeah, 2 years later, it became the song that it is now.
Are you familiar with Universal classic monsters like Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula, that lot?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
No.
Well, so like on a more serious note, what are some of the monsters that you're dealing with now? Because I guess in the song you mentioned pressures. What sort of monsters do you have to deal with?
I think the song's more about like, the fact that everyone's got like their own fears, insecurities, their own anxiety. Like we hide a lot of our true self just to fit in the mold of what the world should be, the stereotypicals or whatever, that being our monsters. But if we kind of put ourselves out there and shared our experiences with everyone, it would be a hell of a lot of an easier world.
Yes, absolutely. So you mentioned coming to the U.S. to actually meet Kevin for the first time. Have you ever performed in the U.S.?
I did Vegas straight after America's Got Talent. Honestly, this is why I'm so excited to go on tour next year, because I've been sat on a bench just waiting to get on stage. And I think in the last 5-6 years, I think I've been on stage for about 15-20 minutes in total. And it's crazy because before America's Got Talent, I was performing everywhere. Like, that was my favorite thing to do, just be on a stage and be able to perform. So super, super pumped that I'm finally going to be back on stage next year.
Yeah, so you were in Vegas. What a weird place to play, if that's the only place you've ever been. Where do you want to play in the U.S.? Is there any place specifically you can hardly wait to be in?
I really want to go to Canada, and I don't know why. I just feel like it's a place that I really want to visit. But besides America, I really want to go to Australia as well. I think it would be really, really cool.
Yeah, man. I've never been to Australia. I've been to Canada, but I've never been to Australia.
Yeah.
Now, I was trying to remember if this is right. Maybe I didn't get this right, but looked down a discography online, like Discogs, and it had you tagged as singing on this Lil Steven recording, Sun City, that done at the Beacon Theater. So is that right?
That was such a crazy experience. It was the first time I'd met Lil Steven. We talked over Twitter and everything, and he came to Newcastle and he messaged me asking to come along, so I ended up going along with my dad to go watch it. And I got a message off him while I was waiting to go in being like, do you know this song? I hadn't actually heard of the song before, but he asked me to come on stage and sing it, but we weren't really sure until we got in the building. Then when we walked in, we went backstage to go meet Lil Steven personally, and Sam Fender was also there. And he literally got us both into this tiny little closet to freaking learn this song, which we both like had no clue what it was. Sam Fender was either really hungover or really drunk. So we were in this closet learning this song, and we ended up going on stage, and Sam Fender's sitting there playing a tambourine on stage while I'm trying to remember these lyrics, and little Steven's just having the time of his life. But it's something that I definitely won't forget.
Hey, you just now something else occurred to me. You got a Christmas single, right? What is it called? Christmas Rocks?
Yeah, it comes out November 24.
All right. We have to keep an eye out for that. And we're going to take a listen to another tune of yours right now, a recent single, That Girl Don't Live Here. When did that come out? So sometime this year?
It came out just maybe about 2-3 months before Monsters.
Okay. And so that's another where Kevin was involved with that, right?
Yeah.
I love the lyrics in there, and especially that, what is the nursery rhyme, Georgie Porgy, Puddin' and Pie, kissed the girls and made them cry. I love it. They're just born to kiss the girls and make them cry. Who added that in the lyrics?
I'm not going to lie. That line was Kevin. I will give him that one.
Well, that's a great one. But what about the genesis of that song? Who had the initial inspiration for that one?
I remember sitting on FaceTime with Kevin being like, I'm so frustrated with the whole music industry, and everyone's still expecting me to be that 13-year-old girl. And and he turned around and he was just like, well, let's write a song about it. So I remember coming off the FaceTime call and writing a load of notes down. And about a couple of days later, he came up with some music and said, remember that idea that you said about the song? I was like, yeah, I've been writing down lyrics as well. And it all kind of came from that. And we put it all together. And yeah, that's That Girl Don't Live Here.
Yeah, I love that. That's that whole kind of vibe to it. That, you know, kind of... And you're going to have to forgive me for lack of a better comparison, but that sort of L.A. King X's and O's thing has got that kind of swing to it, you know, really cool groove. Or do you like her at all, the L.A. King?
Yeah, I've heard a few of her pieces. She's cool. Very cool vibe.
All right. Courtney, thank you so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to give a listen now to That Girl Don't Live Here. It's Courtney Hadwin in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I bet you're gonna miss her now that she is gone. You're right to reconsider all the ways you did her wrong. Can't say she didn't want you. Can't say she didn't try. Some boys, they're just born to kiss the girls and make them cry. If you're looking for a girl like the girl next door, that girl don't live here anymore. She moved out when I moved in. I ain't ever, ever, ever gonna see her again. I know you loved her, so did I. But she has to leave, so say goodbye. If you're looking for a girl like you had before, well, there you go. She don't live here anymore.
With some of her single, That Girl Don't Live Here, that was Courtney Hadwin in the Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks again to Courtney for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Marvelous 3, they were an Atlanta, Georgia band, and they were active originally back in the 1990s, their lineup featuring Butch Walker, who's since gone on to have success as both a noted producer and singer-songwriter. Well, the band reunited this year and released a brand new album titled 4, and Butch will tell us all about it. Butch Walker, he's my guest next time around for our Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.